everyone, and welcome to Dallas Hoops Fancast, a podcast for Mavs fans. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm here with my co-host, Lauren Gunn. Lauren, thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to hop on here with you. I'm just excited to talk some Mavs stuff. There's definitely a lot of crazy things kind of going on in the news. So I'm excited to discuss those with you.
Yeah, you know, I forgot to tell you while we were talking that you're actually the first guest host on the show. So congratulations.
Oh yeah. That's an honor. That's amazing. I appreciate the thought.
Achievement. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously nobody can say that. So I'll.
Wow.
Well, I won't send you a trophy. I'll send you a picture of a trophy or something.
Oh, perfect.
So yes, Lauren is from the Blue Hardwood podcast. You also do some writing for Mavs Moneyball, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I should have a piece coming out soon on Porzingis, but yes, I do a little work here and there for them.
Okay, awesome. So today we're going to talk about, obviously, the Mavs failed protest. We just got word back that the NBA denied the Mavericks' request to replay the last 9 seconds of their game with the Hawks. So we're going to share our thoughts on that and why the NBA declined the request and also why they fined Cuban. And then we're going to get into some thoughts about the Mavs as Maxey played some amazing defense on Zion. So we're going to talk about Maxey's resurgence as a defender, the Mavs perhaps getting better in the clutch, and then a look ahead to the playoffs. But let's start first with this failed protest. First of all, just were you surprised whenever you heard that the league denied their request for a replay?
To be honest, I wasn't all that surprised. The whole concept of replaying the final seconds of a game is something that I struggle to wrap my mind around. I just, as crazy as that call was, and in my opinion, as wrong as it was, I read the report and the quote, and I hear what they're saying, but I still am just like, yeah, I don't agree. But I just feel like for them to replay a game, I mean, it's gotta be, yeah, the Rockets protest to replay, that just made no sense. But this was the final little end of the game. And so I don't know. I don't see a replay of a game happening, but I was surprised with the fine. And I also read the reasoning, but yeah, my initial response was, okay, I mean, Adam Silver's not one to mess around with, but then again, they love to fine Mark Cuban.
Yeah, I think that the Mavs had a better chance than the Rockets of winning because it was only the last 9 seconds. It wasn't like it was the last whatever 30 minutes or something of the game like the Rockets wanted. So I think that worked in their favor if they had convinced the league that the rules had been misapplied. And the league decided that the rules weren't misapplied. So I'm going to read the reason from the league of why they denied it. So the call was about a whistle for a goaltend that turned out not to be a goaltend, but the official said that when the whistle happened, Collins was in the process of doing a putback of the ball, and so they counted the shot. The Mavs said that shot shouldn't have counted. So the league said, the whistle began to sound 1/15th of a second before Collins gained possession of the ball. So that tells me that the Mavs were right, that the whistle did blow before he got the ball, which would say that their protest was correct. But the league said, however, it is well established by prior NBA protest decisions that a factual determination by game officials that is shown in a post-game review to be incorrect is not a misapplication of the playing rules. So basically, they're saying it was a bad call, not a misapplication of the rules. They're saying, like, yes, that was a bad call, they blew it, but they're saying that's not a misapplication of the rules. They didn't break the rules. And so just like you can't replay a game for every bad call, same here, they can't replay this. And yeah, I like, that's confusing to me because I feel like like they're admitting that the Mavs are right, but then also that they're not right. It's kind of weird to me. I'm not sure about that. And then, okay, so then they go on. So that was why they lost the protest. And then you mentioned the fine. $500,000. That is a lot. I mean, do you remember the last huge find that Cuban got?
Which fine are you referring to?
I think it was the last one I remember was when he said that the Mavs were better off tanking. He got fined $600,000 for that.
Okay. Yeah. I was referring to something else, but that's
Well,
not related. But yes, no, I
yeah.
know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. Okay, yeah. I mean, Mark Cuban is such a personality when it comes to the owners, and people are very aware of his net worth and how much money he has. So I feel like maybe sometimes that does play a factor in how much they do find him. But gosh, the words and the verbiage that they used to describe why he was fined, I was very frustrated with that because I was going back to the reasoning as to why they declined or denied the protest. I was like, just like you said, well, they kind of said that Dallas was right, even though it wasn't a misapplication of the rules. So if in the moment the judgment call and everyone sees the judgment call made by the refs and they disagree, it kind of goes back to that Damian Lillard situation when he was livid after Rudy Gobert had that goaltend and it just wasn't called, and he laid into the refs and he was very public about it and he didn't receive any fine. And so for Mark Cuban, while he is the owner, he's not the player. I mean, he is just as involved. And so to see a judgment call made and him believe it's wrong and everyone else be like, what on earth just happened? For him to say how he feels, it's all very mind-boggling to me. But it's just a lot. It's a lot.
So tell me if you think this is crazy or not. So they admit that the refs made a very bad call, but that didn't qualify them to replay the last 9 seconds. That being the case, what would qualify them to replay the last 9 seconds? And then therefore, does this set a bad precedent? I mean, let's say a ref intentionally made the wrong call, and that's just like we're okay with that. There's not going to be anything we can do about that. I mean, is that like tinfoil hat theory, or do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do. I think like when I initially said I wasn't surprised that they didn't replay the final 9 seconds. That's kind of the angle that I was thinking, like what would make them have to replay the final 10 seconds of a game, because there are so many other factors that come into play, like how does that go with the fans? Do you sell tickets for 10 seconds? Like how does that even work? But if you can protest, if you're able to protest to play the final 9 seconds, well then that needs to be on the table, because I feel like I do feel like that it was a valid protest and they had a very good argument. And so in my opinion, with the way the protests go, it's almost as if that will never happen, because I feel like that was as good of an argument as any. So I don't know. I almost feel like it wasn't even considered. So I really don't know that I could say what would have had to happen, because I read what the rules were and what they said, and it was a 1:15 and all that. But I just, if the whistle is blown and they're reviewing the goaltend, and then you just decide that the bucket after the whistle was blown count, like oh my gosh, none of it makes sense to me. And in all honesty, I can talk about it and I'll just talk in circles, because I don't understand how that happened and how that was seen as okay.
Yeah, and I think what makes it confusing for me is that they said that the call was incorrect. And so, I've heard like in listening to other pods, I think it was the Athletics Dallas Mavs podcast, 77 Minutes in Heaven. They did a really great breakdown of that whole play, and their conclusion was that the call was actually correct. And I was like, from that point of view, I can see them losing the protest because the call was correct. But here the NBA is saying that the call is incorrect, but
Right.
not a misapplication of the playing rules. So it's like, if that doesn't qualify for a replay, then just like you said, just take it off the board. Just say,
Yeah.
don't even bother protesting. That's not even a checkbox on the form. Just like the last time a protest was won, it was because they said that Shaq fouled out when he actually didn't, and obviously that affects the game, so they replayed that. That makes sense. I think it's black and white. When it's something like this that's a little gray, just don't even let it be an option, because now it's just confusing, because I feel
Right.
like you're never going to win that protest, so why even let them do it? Unless, I don't know, maybe it's just to make them feel better, but Yeah, I'm like you. I could talk in circles. So, okay, going to the fine. Now you brought up Damian Lillard, and he had kind of the same situation. He went off on the refs, or on the officiating, but he didn't get fined. So here's what the NBA said for why Mark Cuban got fined. They said it's a recognized part of sports for fans and the media at times to criticize officiating, but team executives must be held to a higher standard. And they talked about how a team owner could try to influence the game and how that's not fair. He said demeaning league employees also creates an intimidating workplace environment with an increased focus on respectful conduct by coaches, players, and fans during games. The actions of team executives should set an example and not lower expectations for appropriate behavior in our arenas. And I think that I do agree with that, that Damian Lillard wasn't fined, but maybe Mark Cuban as owner, they hold him to a higher level because he's supposed to set an example. And I mean, they're right. Like, we've had problems with fans interacting with players in an inappropriate way, and they're trying to control that. And so if they let Mark Cuban get away with this, then that's, what is that saying to fans that get banned from arenas? It's like, how is that different? So I can kind of understand that.
So I do think that whole disrespecting and demeaning the league employees when, in some of those tweets he did mention a couple of names and the process, and I do agree he does need to be held to a higher standard. So in that regard, I can understand and appreciate that. Gosh, it's there are so many different aspects of the Damian Lillard situation kind of going at the refs. There was that clip of him after the game kind of pointing at the ref and the players and the staff holding him back. So that is a little different compared to Mark, and even though he is always on the court, but I don't know. I guess I think maybe the fine was warranted. He doesn't hold back, and I'll be honest, that is one of the reasons that I do love him and that I do love that he is such a well-known and people just that personality, people know that personality around the league. He has such a reputation, and I know some people are fans, some people aren't. Maybe one being Kendrick Perkins. I listened, or I didn't voluntarily listen to him, but I heard him this morning saying something about, oh, he said he made a comment that said, oh, somebody's got a Mark Cuban, somebody's got to put a muzzle on that dog. And I was like, oh
Oh,
boy.
okay.
So yeah, I don't know that anything Kendrick Perkins says has any meaning, but yeah, I think when it comes down to holding the owners, as you said, the people that are o the owner of the team, they do absolutely have to be held to a higher standard.
And I mean, I agree with the reasoning. I think the fine is, I don't know, it seems a little excessive, but maybe it's just to send a message. I don't know. And I thought it was, so their last closing statement here, it says officiating is one of the toughest jobs in sports. While officials remain accountable for their on-court performance, maintaining competitive fairness, blah, 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 blah. And the remain accountable is the part that caught my eye because I was like, how are, like, here you had this whole thing, you admit that it's incorrect. We get the last 2 minutes report, which is for transparency. I agree with that, but I don't see how they're held accountable. And again, I've tweeted this before. I'm not saying I want their head on a silver platter or anything, but like, what is the accountability thing? Do we have like a, three strikes and you have to go back to training or something like that? It's like if you get a speeding ticket, you have to take defensive driving courses. Like, I don't see the accountability unless it's just something that is behind the scenes. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I'm assuming it has to be something behind the scenes because there are so many, and I don't know if it's just this season, and I know a lot of people have said there has been a lot of problems in the officiating kind of area this whole season, and maybe it's just me feeling with the season starting off and that whole Portland Dorian Finney-Smith review, maybe that it just left a sour taste in my mouth with this season. But I feel like every time I go to a game, I see the same officials. And I know that there are officials that, whether where they live and the geographic aspect of who can make it to certain games and stuff, that all comes into play. And there are a lot of things that I don't know about. But when it comes to holding people accountable, I have just seen some horrible calls made. And so, while, yeah, they are judgment calls and they're not always going to get them right, the accountability aspect of, oh, behind the scenes, how how are you going to prevent this from happening again? Because it is a judgment call, but you can't let the same thing happen again. And I would be very interested to know what exactly they do mean by that accountability. I mean, Scott Foster is a name that everyone knows, and they know the face, but and he is well respected and he's been around for forever, but he's just one of those guys that sometimes I'm like, you've been around for forever, but what was that call? So I just wish I knew more is what it comes down to.
Yeah. And I think there's a fine line between understanding that they're human and not expecting perfection. And it's just like me and my job, I don't want my boss to jump down my throat every time I make a mistake. And so I think there's like a balance between having that fellow feeling for somebody that has a tough job, but at the same time, you know, this is a job and there should be measures in place to make sure that they're doing the right thing. And if they're missing it, it's just an honest mistake. How are we making sure that doesn't happen again? You know, how are we, you know, behind the scenes saying like, okay, you know what, why don't we send them back to training for a little bit? It's like, it's things like that. I think there's a balance, but I think it's doable. So those are our thoughts. Feel free to share your thoughts on Twitter. I'm at _ Sydney Myers. I forgot to share your Twitter earlier. It's at LG Gunn with three N's.
It's four N's. It's hard.
Oh, four.
When you look at it, you're like, oh God, what am I looking at? But, when I was trying to put my name in there, they're just like, oh, that one's taken. And I was like, oh, joy. So I just kept adding.
Just kept adding in. So let us know what you guys think about the protest. Let's move on. I want to do a segment called Hold Your Horses. So basically, I'm going to share a thought or an opinion, and then let me know if you think it's crazy, like if I need to just stop, hold my horses, or if you're like, you know what, there might be something to that. So first of all, I want to talk about Maxey's defense. Just in general, but, you know, we just watched his defense against Zion Williamson. He did amazing. There's some talk that he might be kind of like the Mavs version of Draymond Green. Do you think there's some merit to that? Or even crazier, do you think he's a better version of Draymond Green?
I do think there's merit to that. I think Draymond is a name that you don't even have to say his last name and everyone knows exactly who you're talking about. When you say Maxey, people around the league might not necessarily feel that way. But when you look at their impact and kind of the way they play, as far as Maxey can guard several different positions. I mean, he on the switches, he's very, very capable of picking up a guard or playing post defense on someone that's bigger than him. I mean, Zion is 285 pounds and Maxey had 5 blocks on him when we played New Orleans the other night. So I absolutely think his defensive impact is similar to Draymond's. I think his three-point shooting ability is definitely better than Draymond's. I don't think anyone could disagree with that. But but I think the impact that – I mean, Maxey's an energy guy. He comes in and he gets these lobs from whether it's J.J. Bray off the bench or Luka. He gets the corner threes and gets the crowd rocking with his little – call me, you know, his little thing. So I mean, in that regard, he is similar to Draymond. I think I don't think that's too crazy of a thought.
Yeah, you talked about his defensive versatility, and I think that is why people compare him to Draymond, because Draymond can really guard 1 through 5 depending on who the 5 is and who the 1 is, but he has that versatility. And Maxey, although I don't think you could put him on a guard full time, whereas with Draymond, again, like depending on who the player is, you could have him guard on the perimeter the whole game. But Maxey, he has the versatility to where he can do that. Like if he gets switched, it's not like, oh crap, this is a bucket, or it's not like he gets lucky. I mean, he is legitimately a good defender when he gets switched onto a guard. I want to share some of his defensive numbers. So overall, opponent field goal percentage drops almost 3% when he guards them, which is 36th in the league among players that have played at least 50 games. Their three-point percentage drops 8.3%, which is second in the league. And then their two-point percentage drops, again, almost 3%. That's 42nd in the league. So, I mean, it's not just Mavs fans saying it. Like, the numbers show that he is a legit good defender and a versatile defender, too.
Yeah, I love that he kind of was someone that no other team seemed to have their eye on. And yeah, there's that Wurzburg, Germany connection. But I mean, talk about a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, he's been awesome. So yeah, I think I agree that there's some merit to him being kind of like the Mavs version of Draymond Green. I don't think we need to pigeonhole him into that, but I think, you know, that role is important and we have a guy that can fill that role. Okay, next thought, next idea. Are the Mavs, do you think the Mavs are getting better in the clutch, or do you think that they're, is that a crazy thought? Do you think they're staying the same? They just won an overtime game against the Pelicans.
Oh, man. So right now the Mavs are 19th in the league in clutch win percentage, and people have talked about that being an area of, oh, what's going on there? They just don't quite seem to have that figured out. Lately, I think Porzingis is becoming more confident, and you can just see that with the way he attacks the rim. So I think him becoming more confident and more comfortable playing that five position, I think that is going to translate in those clutch situations when we do need to go to Luka or Porzingis. Obviously, Seth is on a crazy stretch. I mean, 37 the other night. Like, he's going off right now. So I think the win against New Orleans, I was glad to see them pull out an overtime win, especially considering there's just been a couple of injuries and a lot of things that the Mavs have had to adapt to. So it was nice to see that overtime win. I think the loss to Chicago was a little frustrating, or a lot frustrating. and then the San Antonio game, we did win that, but it got a little too close for comfort for me. So I think there's definitely still some improvement to do, but I think we're certainly moving in the right direction. In the last five games, we've had, where is it? Three clutch games, and we're 10th in the league. So you can kind of see that we are moving in the right direction, but I think there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, that's you talked about the overtime win. So before that, they were 0-3 in overtime games, so they got their first overtime win, and that's such a good point about Porzingis, not Maxi. He's good, but he's not that good. Porzingis regaining that confidence, and that's so crucial, because obviously to win in the clutch, you have to have your stars step up. I mean, those are the guys that win clutch games for you. And so with Porzingis getting better, that would translate to them being better in the clutch. So I want to share a stat with you. This is a very small sample size, but if you take their net rating in the clutch, in November they were 26th in the league with a net rating of -28.8. And their net rating in the clutch was negative in December, January, February. But in March, they are 10th in the league, like you brought out, with a positive net rating of 30.4. Now, in March, they only have two games with clutch situations. So again, it's a really small sample size. But, you know, I mean, even with a little bit of data that we have, like, so far it's trending up, and I think Porzingis getting better is a part of that.
Right. I think that people that are watching consistently, and you notice how the game and how the team, how that closing lineup is starting to, like you said, they have that positive trend, and they're just playing a little bit better together. So I think we are moving in the right direction, and that will, as the season gets further and further along. I mean, you have to think there are a lot of new guys on this team. I mean, we're over halfway through the season, but this is their first season together. So there are a lot of kinks that are being worked out. And I think the more that they play together, the more it will just continue to translate in a positive way.
Yeah. And then again, the better that Porzingis gets. And also, you know, you talked about health. Like, obviously, whenever Porzingis and Luka are out, their clutch net rating is going to be terrible. So I think that's part of it, too. So, I mean, I do think that so far they're getting better in the clutch. But again, it's a really small sample size. We'll see. Like, I think that it's going to continue, but, you know, we'll have to see. Okay, next one. So the Mavericks seem to be unconcerned with the standings, and right now I believe they would face the Clippers, or odds are they would fall to where they meet the Clippers in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Are the Clippers the best matchup for the Mavs? Do you think that's why they don't care about the standings?
I think they're more concerned, kind of going back to that health. It just seems like there's something week after week, there's something that we're dealing with. I do not think the Clippers are the best matchup for the, in fact, I think they're probably the team we should steer clear of the most. I ideally would like, I know they've been doing well lately, but I would like the Rockets. I think that's just an awesome rivalry. I would love to see them throw anyone at Porzingis. I just think that'd be a great series to watch. I'm not sure what everyone else's expectations are, but my concern is get everyone healthy going into playoffs and just have everyone go in and give it everything they've got and just try to get that playoff experience under their belt. Because I think moving forward, the duo that we have, we're going to continue to add, because we have exceeded expectations this season. People weren't even sure if Dallas was going to be in the playoffs. And to start off the season, we were up in the top of the standings. So Dallas has kind of put the league on notice in that way. And there are going to be players, whether they're superstars or kind of Gordon Hayward, Danilo Gallinari level players, they're going to come in and help improve this team. And I think long term, the playoff runs will definitely get more and more serious. But right now, I think the concern needs to be not who will we be playing, because there are just so many variables and so many things that you can control and can't control. So I think focusing on what you can control as far as keeping everyone healthy and setting them up as for success as best as you can is what should be focused on.
So then do you think that if they're healthy, they can compete with anybody, or is it more just about getting the experience?
So I think I watched, there was a, I think the, maybe the second game we played the Lakers, it was a nationally broadcasted game. And somebody said, I don't remember who it was, it might've been Reggie Miller, said, oh gosh, Dallas is in for it tonight, 'cause the Lakers bench is so much better than Dallas's. And I was floored at that statement. And so I do think our depth, and there are a lot of things that we have going into playoffs that that teams don't necessarily have. Like Denver is a very deep team. I think the Rockets are not that deep of a team, and I don't think the Lakers really are that deep of a team, even though they've got names that everyone knows. I don't want to even touch the Lakers, but I think, gosh, in regards to can they go up against anyone, I think Denver, the Lakers, and the Clippers are the teams that they would struggle the most against. But I would take Utah. I would take Houston. I want to see what playoff Luka is like, because he has had that professional kind of tournament experience in Real Madrid. So I want to see what all of that looks like. I think the primary concern does need to be health, but I don't know, with the Clippers adding Joakim Noah today, they may be just a whole nother animal. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Clippers are literally the worst matchup for the Mavericks. I think I would most like to see actually, I don't know if I'd most like to see the Rockets. Maybe the Jazz I would feel better about, but I would like to see the Rockets too. I think their philosophies are similar, actually. I mean, the Mavs play a five out just like the Rockets do, but, you know, Porzingis is 7'3", whereas the Rockets don't have anyone over 5 feet. So it's like a similar philosophy, just executed differently. So I think that would be interesting. And then also the coaching matchup of Carlisle and D'Antoni, I think that would just be so cool to see. I mean, obviously with Doc Rivers, you know, great coach too, but the matchup I think isn't there. But yeah, to see that coaching battle, I think would be awesome. The Clippers, yeah, again, I mean, they're currently third in offensive rating and fifth in defensive rating. When they lock in, they are, I think, the best defensive team in the league across the board. I mean, obviously Giannis is probably the best defender. You know, you have like the Lakers have some great defenders as well, but like across the board, team defense, one-on-one defense, I think the Clippers, when they're locked in, they are the best defensive team, and they have depth. I mean, you go down their roster, they have so much depth. They just added Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson. Like you said, they added Joakim Noah. So they have depth, defense, and superstars. If you ask me, that's what you need to win a championship. So I do not want to see the Clippers in the playoffs. But, you know, again, it's like I think back a few years ago when they faced the Spurs in the playoffs in the first round. And I thought, I was like, I just want one game. I just want to win one game and that's it. But they took them to 7 games and honestly could have, if the ball, you know, bounces differently a couple of times, they could have won that series. So I say this now, but I don't know. Maybe they see something in the matchup. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Stephen A. Smith, and I'm hot and cold on his take sometimes, but he said that Dallas is a team that people have not talked about in regards to upsetting people or other teams. They're just they're not the team that people have been expecting to pull off any kind of upset. And he, after, I want to say it was against, after the game where Seth had 37, maybe, he said that people need to start having that conversation. And so I thought that was interesting because, of course, from an internal perspective, you're like, oh, yeah, we're great. You know, we got depth. We got Luka. It's great. Everything's great. But when you hear people that look at the league as a whole and say, oh, gosh, Dallas is something that you don't want to have to deal with. That, I mean, that says something, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's and I think a lot of it goes back to like you were talking about the playoff experience. What I don't know what I'm calling it, but just that thing that Luka has where you want to see him in the playoffs, and you know that if you have him, you have a chance. And you know if you have a great coach like Carlisle, you have a chance. And you know that if you have a duo like Luka and Porzingis, you have a chance. Like all these things that tell you we have the things, we have a chance. Now whether or not it'll happen, the odds aren't really in your favor, but you have a chance. I mean, you know, going back to when they played the Spurs, like the way that they defended them and basically shut down their defense, their offense, was by switching every pick and roll, which is like so simple, but it was so genius and effective. And it's just like little things like that where you normally wouldn't think of it. Or if you look at it at face value, you're like, this is a terrible defense. But, you know, if that coaching battle works in the Mavs' favor, again, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, maybe we have a chance. Maybe I could convince myself that this could be a long series. So yeah, I honestly think, like I said, the Jazz and the Rockets are the ones I'd rather face the most. The Clippers I don't want to face at all, but maybe it's just more about the experience and maybe that's all they want this year. So yeah, that's all the topics I have. Lauren, thank you so much for joining the show. I want to give you a couple minutes to plug whatever you want, podcast, writing, Twitter, all of that.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. I didn't realize I was the first guest. That is that just made me so happy. But yeah, as you mentioned before, you can follow me on Twitter at LGunn. It's 4 N's. I know it's a little confusing, but yeah. And then the Mavs Moneyball. If people follow the Mavs Moneyball Twitter account, that does link it to my Twitter page, so you can just see it there. But yeah, and then I am co-host of the Blue Hardwood podcast with Brian Zillum. It's available on Spotify and Apple Music at the Blue Hardwood Podcast. But yeah, so super, super glad to have hopped on with you. And yeah, hopefully we can do something again in the future.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So guys, go subscribe to that podcast. Follow her on Twitter. I'm at _ Sydney Myers. You can follow the show at Dallas Hoopscast. And then again, all new episodes are on DallasHoopscast.com. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.